Welcome to the Basketball Index Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor, and today we are talking about the state of the Nets. We're talking to Matt Brooks. He's a reporter for Nets Daily and also does NBA content over at basketballnews.com. Matt, how you doing and how you feeling about the state of the Nets?
Pretty exciting. It's been a good, the off season's felt long, I think, in a way, because there's been so much going on with the Nets. But I'm excited. I can't wait to get into some real deal basketball.
So obviously the Nets had a very, it was an eventful, or I don't know if it was eventful. I guess it was more just newsworthy. I guess a lot of things didn't actually happen. What did it feel like from a Nets perspective? How did it feel, if you could put a number on it or maybe a letter or whatever you want to do, of what were the likelihoods of Durant and Kyrie leaving from a Nets standpoint?
There was a while where it felt like we were at a high percentage, I guess. I thought we were like 70-80% they were going to leave, you know, kind of earlier in the offseason. And then it just became kind of clear that the front office just wasn't going to accept anything less than just a king's ransom for Durant. And then, you know, knowing that Durant probably wasn't going to get traded, it seemed kind of set in stone that Kyrie wasn't going to get moved either. The whole time I kind of was like, once Durant gets moved, Kyrie's going to be the next domino to fall. But of course, because Durant doesn't happen, well, all of a sudden you have this team that's like really good on paper. And now we're just going to see if everything can fall in place for them.
Do you think there was anything to, because the Jazz blew their team up this offseason, like only so many stars can get moved at a time because, I mean, all the GMs have to talk to each other, right? And if you're trying to figure out if you can get Mitchell or if you're trying to get Gobert or Durant or, you know, if there's too many moving pieces in the offseason, do you think that played a part at all? Or do you think that was the front office just being like, we have control of Durant for a number of years? We really don't want to move him. So if we don't have to, we're not going to.
No, mostly because I think those two guys are such different ages that you're like looking at a different market for each guy. So Durant's going to be your, like, we are one piece away in our eyes. And if we get Durant, even if he declines in 2 years, we get this guy, we feel like we have a chance to win a title. Ultimately, that team wasn't really there. The market didn't bear that, I guess, suitor outside of Phoenix, who just didn't have the pieces, I think, to get, you know, into the Durant market, at least right now. And then you look at Mitchell and it's like, it's a lot of younger teams, the Knicks, the Cavs, which was an awesome move. So I do think there was a world where both guys could have gotten moved just because of the age discrepancy. I don't know if you'd get that every single offseason.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. Looking at this team from afar, it feels like the last couple seasons and heading into this one, it feels like they're less of a team and more of just coworkers. How do you think they find a way with the coach, the front office, the players to try to meld this into a more cohesive unit?
I think that's a good way to describe them, because even there isn't that relationship between the coach and the front office and the star players. Like, it feels like there's a million different factions, is probably not the right word for it, although maybe there is some degree of having factions between the two stars in the front office. But because last year, like, there were legitimate, factions on the team between Durant and Harden and Kyrie. Like, it was just, there was so much going on there. This year, it's like there are different camps within the team. There's the Kyrie KD duo that seems to be inseparable. Ben Simmons is just kind of randomly there. You have all the role players that have been there for a while. So Joe Harris, Claxton. And then there are just a couple random new guys. TJ Warren is on this team just kind of randomly. It's very strange, but like, I guess if everybody gets on the same page, their training camp is really short. It's only 5 days. Maybe they have a kumbaya moment at training camp. I don't know. There's a world where they're really, really good. But right now, yeah, it does just feel like such an odd group. Ben Simmons is really the one for me where I'm like, he's so good, but God, it's so weird. I keep forgetting that he's on the team in a way, because it's just such a random player to have with this specific group, although he could mesh really well.
Okay, so let's start with Ben Simmons, because I feel like there's a lot of questions with him. He's been a consistent leader in the league in our defensive versatility metric. What do you expect? This is a 6'10 guy, special movement skills, but he is coming off of back surgery.
Yeah, the back surgery is a big thing. I'm curious to see how he's deployed. Are they going to use him at point of attack pretty much right away? Or is this going to be a guy that's going to be playing more along the back line? You know, I don't know about center, but maybe they'll play him in certain small ball units. And because the Nets switch so much, he'll be ending up taking those assignments at the end of the shot clock versus is he going to be guarding primary stars, the Kawhi Leonards, the point guards, the whatever, Dame Lillard? Is he going to be guarding those guys early in the shot clock because he's guarding point of attack, or at the end of the shot clock because the Nets are going to switch and he'll be, you know, I guess, handling the end of possession? So I'm really curious about how he's deployed in that way. I'm sure you can do a degree of both depending on lineups. But that'll definitely be my big thing I'm watching for, just because he's not going to be playing in drop as much next to Embiid. He'll be on a pretty switch heavy team.
So let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. How do you see him fitting in next to Durant and Kyrie?
I have no clue. I mean, I have a million, there are like a million different ways you can use him. You can use him as like a handoff hub. So use him in sets like Pistol, Chicago. That's another one the Nets ran a lot. I heard when they first got him, they planned to use him out of the post a lot, which I thought was interesting. I don't know what that would look like, but maybe there is a way where you can use him as your, you know, floor mapper. I don't want to call it like, I guess like a Draymond in a way, where you're using him in the high post and he's making reads from there. I also would like to see him in the short role a little bit as a center, where he's making reads kind of like, you know, Clippers, Blake Griffin, especially in lineups where he's next to somebody like Nick Claxton. Maybe Nick Claxton can be their DeAndre Jordan in that setting. So there's a lot of different ways you can use him. I'm just really curious to see what they go with right away. I didn't even mention that he could be your ball handler in certain spurts. We'll see what that looks like. But yeah, I'm just curious to see, like, we'll know pretty quickly, I bet, in preseason, like where they're leaning with him.
All right, so let's move on to Durant, because I feel like, you know, everything kind of circles around him. He had a fantastic season last year. He was second best in our overall shot-making talent, which just takes in degree. The shots you're making versus the quality and the difficulty. He had the second best mid-range shot-making pull-up talent in our database going back to 2014. And I feel like he's just, I mean, he's always been a fantastic shooter, but I feel like the last few years, he's just gotten to like Sage-level shooting. What is that looking like game to game? Because the highlights are pretty wild.
Yeah, there's like certain games where I watch Durant and it's just really hard for me to believe that there's been like basketball players better than him ever, because he just doesn't miss. And you're like, I don't know. I just can't imagine being, you know, somebody being better than this 7-foot guy that just decides to miss from nowhere. And I think that's a great way to describe it. Like, just his shooting has, I think, gone to another level since the Achilles injury. And I do wonder if it's just because that's all he was able to do for a year and a half, was just shoot and try to do as little movement as possible. He's incredible.
So he is aging. He did have the torn Achilles, which is a pretty serious injury, but he's come back. He's looked really good when he has played. I know he's missed a lot of time due to injury the last 2 years. One thing that is concerning, his drive foul drawn rate. So basically when he drives, how often he gets fouled, took a dip last year. He was 84th percentile 2 years ago. He was 60th percentile last year. Is there any cause for concern there?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's definitely something that, and I don't know if that's just because he's such a good shooter now that he's like, I'd rather just pull up for whatever, a 2-dribble pull up from 15 feet out, because I know that looks going to be there for me. Or if it is something that is an example of him aging. But either way, I do think it's one of the many reasons why he wasn't quite as effective as he was in, you know, previous years in the postseason last year. It just didn't feel like he could get downhill as easily. You know, certain guys like Grant Williams were able to stay in front of him. Al Horford had possessions where he was able to stay in front of him. So I do think a little bit of that verve off the dribble and, you know, going downhill has been lost just a tiny bit for Durant.
Let's move on to Kyrie, kind of the Robin to his Batman. And he had obviously a weird year last year. He didn't play a bunch because of vaccination status. When he did come back, the playmaking took a little bit of a hit. The volume was down. The quality was down in the data. Was that, you think, maybe just it was a weird situation, not finding his rhythm, new teammates, maybe coming over in trades? What did you see out of Kyrie last year?
Not a lot. Just didn't see him a lot, for one. I think that's fair. I can believe that. It did kind of feel like he was trying to shoot his way into some sort of rhythm with just not playing at all. I've never found, like, if all the skills, because I feel like Kyrie, like, his his fans, at least, they're always, there's always like some skill that people think he's underrated in. I can get behind the defense thing. I can't with the passing. I've never found Kyrie's passing to be underrated. If anything, it's probably a little bit overrated for me, and he's not necessarily thought of as a passer. So I passing for me is never the first thing I could see from Kyrie, but I'm not super shocked that his volume may have been down even a little bit more than it normally is. That said, like, I don't know what sample we're really looking at in a way.
That's true. Well, I think he played like 1,000 minutes last year, which he's normally north of 2,000.
Right.
Everyone continues to age as we spin around the sun. Kyrie is someone that has missed a fair amount of time in his career. Are there concerns? I know that he's going into a contract year. Are there concerns with his just availability, whether it's an injury thing or maybe, who knows, something else going into this year?
I mean, the weird thing is it's like he's been relatively well, the first year in Brooklyn, he had that shoulder injury that I guess is kind of similar to what Paul George had a year later. Or maybe that was last year, whenever, one of the last, all the seasons are jumbled together for me the last 3 years. I think Kyrie is the biggest thing is it doesn't really have that much to do with his health. He'll suffer like untimely injuries, and he's had that in the past, like the ankle sprain against the Bucks. He's just had years where that seems to happen at the worst time for him. But yeah, the availability thing really just comes down to anything but basketball related things.
Let's move on to some of the ancillary players. They bring in Royce O'Neal. They trade a first round pick for him. To me, this seemed like a good move. He's a solid wing stopper. In our database, he has an A in D LeBron, which is just overall defensive impact, and an A in catch and shoot 3-point shot making, which basically takes into account your difficulty. So kind of that ideal 3-and-D player. I feel like with him and Ben Simmons, you could put together a pretty good closing lineup defensively. What are you looking for him?
Yeah. Guy that's going to space on the corners and the wings. He's not going to move around a ton. I was watching Royce O'Neal film today, which is the point of the offseason that we're at. That's what I was doing my day. I like him, man. Like, he fights the big wing scorer thing just comes down to like how much he fights and his strong base and the way he plays with his chest. Really good at like fronting guys. Like, he had possessions where he's able to at least tangle a little bit with somebody like Joel Embiid, who obviously is like massive compared to him. So just a fighter. Yeah. And then the shooting is legit. I mean, he's really good. He's not going to do too much more than that. I think his passing's, he's not like a high level floor reader, but he moves it. He keeps the chain moving. And I think for that way, he's going to be a really good piece next to these guys and somebody I really like next to Ben Simmons, just because of the corner 3-point shooting. That's something that is going to fit really well next to a guy like Simmons, who's been a league leader in 3-point shots generated.
All right. So this is a thing I have been fascinated with ever since they acquired Seth Curry. You have Patty Mills, you have Seth Curry, and then you have Joe Harris coming back from injury. I did zero research on this, but this has to be the greatest trio of role-playing players / bench players of all time, right?
Yeah, I love it. I wish you could. I don't feel great about playing them together, only because of like defensive issues. I just get like flashbacks of the Celtics series last year, but it's pretty nuts. And you obviously have those guys interchangeably coming in and out. I'm curious what the minutes distribution looks like, especially when you got Royce O'Neal. I'd like to see some TJ Warren this year if possible, if he's healthy. So, I mean, on paper, ridiculous shooting. I just am really curious about the minutes distribution. I personally thought one of these guys was going to be traded this offseason. I was kind of looking at Seth Curry as being the guy being moved, not because he isn't good, but just because it's a good contract. I think he's around $8 million a year, really high level shooter. But now all three are here, so it should be fun. And they're going to have shooting that's just out the gym all the time.
I'm going to go the other way as you. I say you play all three of these guys and you play them with Kyrie and Durant, right? You have just no real defenders on the floor and you try to have an offensive rating of like 125 and you're like, okay, we're giving up 119 on the defensive end, but just, I don't know if any team can match this type of firepower.
That's very, 2020, 2021 Nets. Like that's just like the whole, that was the vibe with Harden and Kyrie and Durant, Jeff Green and Joe Harris. That lineup was absurd. And they just were like, we're just going to space you out and put you in hell.
Okay. So what is going on with the center rotation with the Nets? And if I could throw something out, this team already has no chemistry. What if you go for a guy like Hassan Whiteside, fantastic rim protector and still on the free agent market?
Yeah, I like Whiteside. I mean, I've seen Dwight Howard and Cousins. I could get down with Boogie Cousins. I'm not sure. I mean, it's a very explosive personality is probably a good way to put it. On a team with a lot of eclectic personalities is probably the best way I can put this. I don't know. I feel like Whiteside in general is just pretty underrated by the general NBA community. I get that he's like a meme in a way, but he's a good player and had some really good minutes for Utah last year. So I don't know. It seems like they're going to roll in with what they've got as like Markieff Morris as this, you know, potentially backup five and maybe some Ben Simmons. And then Claxton, and I guess maybe they feel good about how De'Ron Sharpe is going to progress in year two. I don't know. It's bizarre, but it seems like there's no, there's no whatever hastiness to fill that role, I guess, in a way.
What do you see as the closing lineup for this team?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I'm going to go Kyrie, Joe Harris, KD, Ben Simmons at the five, and then I could go either Seth or Royce O'Neal. And then if TJ Warren's foot is really 100%, which I don't know, I have no idea. I don't think anybody knows right now, except for probably the Nets, and we won't really know until training camp and preseason. But maybe one of those two guys. I'd probably lean Royce O'Neal, though, just for defensive intensity and just in general, like he's a good shooter.
So they have been talking about this. There's been a lot of murmuring of Ben Simmons at the five.
Yep.
And I feel like that gives you some, obviously it helps on the offensive end, right? If he's your five, then you're probably going to have, you know, shooter surrounding. On the defensive end, what is Ben Simmons weigh? Like probably 230, something like that. We're not playing in the 90s anymore, but I guess the idea is he'd be pretty lethal in defending ball screens.
Yeah, he's not a rim protector. He's only got a 7-foot wingspan, and he's 6'11", 6'10". So it's not like a huge, huge plus wingspan versus somebody like Durant that's a 7'5" wingspan. So I worry a little bit about the rim protection late. Granted, you know, teams in general isolate a lot more at the end of games. So it, you know, how many, I guess you'd just be worried about like a Giannis. That would be a team you'd be worried about in that setting, but maybe you wouldn't worry as much against the Clippers or somebody like that who are going to be dominating from the mid range. They're going to be generating threes. So I don't know. I would have to see again. It kind of comes back to the point I was making earlier is I just don't know how they're going to use Simmons. Like, is he going to be guarding stars at the top of the key, or is he going to be kind of hanging back and playing a little bit more of rim protector and then, you know, guarding guys on switches? I don't know. It would have to depend on how the Nets employ him, I guess, generally.
So let's play a little game here. Let's play a little worst case, best case scenario. What do you see as the best case scenario for this Nets team going into the season if just everything goes right?
Win the championship, right? Like, I mean, the talent's there. Like, it would have to be Ben Simmons finds his perfect home and Kyrie and KD are happy. Kyrie plays 50, 60 games. Joe Harris is 100% and there's no complications from the ankle surgery that he had twice last year. You know, even somebody like TJ Warren looks good and is what 80, 90% of himself. So like, there's a lot of things that would have to go well, but if it all does, which it hasn't historically for the Nets in the past, this I think is a championship team. I think it's sitting there and if they just sort of need the cohesion and the reps together, so I'd start there is where you're looking at as a high end for this team.
All right. And then let's just say worst case scenario, like just smoke alarms are going off. There's fires in the locker room. Like what's just give me the worst possible. What's your nightmare scenario?
All right, nightmare scenario. We'll start with the low hanging. Well, okay, not low hanging, but just like the ones that I can start with. Joe Harris doesn't look like himself. There's complications with the ankle surgery that he's had. My guy T.J. Warren is cooked physically, and then things get really ugly. This team starts off slow. They're like 500, maybe a little bit below around December. Steve Nash gets fired. Then they're like, all right, we got a new voice in here, Jacques Vaughn. That doesn't improve anything. We get to February, Durant wants out, and maybe they have to trade Durant. Then Kyrie gets unhappy because Durant is gone. Meanwhile, things have gotten really tense with Ben Simmons, who was really excited about this new opportunity in Brooklyn. Things haven't worked out. He gets a little unhappy, and then this team just implodes. And we get to the summer, and it's like, you know, things are just on fire. Sean Marks is looking at jobs in San Antonio. Like, how messy can we get? I mean, things can go completely haywire. It can just blow up from top to bottom. So that's kind of an idea of how ugly it gets.
As a Laker fan, I have seen some pretty high profile teams just completely implode in my lifetime. And I will say it will give you a lot of content to report on.
Oh, it has not stopped with trauma to report on. So I would expect nothing less at this point.
Do you remember Fatheads, the giant poster things?
Fatheads. Hold on. I'm going to look it up right now.
They're like infomercials for them, and they're like huge. They're like the size of the player.
Yes.
I just thought of the Fathead that I want. I want the Drummond peace sign, fast break layup, Fathead. That's what if I could have that on the back of my bedroom door as like a teenager, I think that would be, that would be fantastic.
What if that's why they didn't bring him back? Like, they were like, we can't risk this again. We can't let him curse another team with another meme.
Man, oh, that was, I remember the night that happened. I saw it on Twitter and I was like, oh man, this is the best thing I've seen in a long time.
Yep, that and the Lakers on the year before where he's doing LeBron's post of his. So
yeah. Oh man. All right, Matt. Matt Brooks, it was a pleasure to talk to you about the Nets. Again, you can find him, reporter for the Nets Daily, does NBA content for basketballnews.com. Matt, what is your Twitter handle?
Matt Brooks NBA. Find everything I do there. Writing, videos, podcasts like this. I'm pretty good about sharing. So yeah, it's all there.
All right, fantastic. Well, that does it for this episode. My name is Taylor, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Basketball Index Podcast.